Welcome to episode 249 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us today, listener. In our last episode, we looked at equality and also ways to bring new people into the industry. And this week, I'm going to try and tackle that as well by looking at diversity within the ski industry. Now, my name's Ian Martin. First off, I just want to acknowledge that I'm a white middle-class man. I know a lot about skiing and snow sports, but zero about what it's like trying to navigate snow sports if you're from an ethnic background. What I do know is that people with black and brown skin are hugely underrepresented within snow sports, and that doesn't seem right. So today, we have some great guests who are all doing something to address that. Now, regular listeners will know that I recently did some fundraising for the snow sports charity Snowcamp, and we'll cover that a little later on. But I'm delighted to be joined today by two representatives from Snowcamp. First up, we have Amira Blackwood, who is nearing the end of her apprenticeship with Snowcamp and is currently on placement, I think, with the Ski Club of Great Britain. Hi, Amira. How are you?
Hi, I'm all good.
Am I right about that? Currently, you're with Ski Club of Great Britain?
No, I've finished that placement up now.
But we'll come back to that because I'm going to ask you about that. But also joining us from Snowcamp for his first time in the studio, and I looked this up since episode 98, which was 2 years ago, is Dan Keeley, who is the Community and Events Director at Snowcamp. Hi, Dan. How are you going?
Yeah. Hi, Ian. How are you doing? Good to be on here.
I'm very good, thank you. And it's great to have you back on. Listeners might also recall we have had segments from Dan at different points, including covering his epic run to Rome, which he did a couple of years ago, I guess it was. You might remember that. Just remind listeners what you did, Dan.
So, I ran from the London Eye down to the Colosseum in Rome. And it was actually Ian who joined me for the first stint and pulled me along to Rochester to keep me going on day one. I think it was 30 miles maybe to get to Rochester on day one of the challenge. And the highlight, of course, was running over the Alps and raising money for Snowcamp as well. It was a challenge that was close to my heart, and it was good to have you there at the start, Ian.
Yeah, well, to put that into context, I ran one day of 30 miles, and you ran how many days of 30 miles?
35 days, averaging 35 miles a day.
Yeah, well, I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well, but it was an amazing achievement. I'm also delighted to welcome Zahir Shaw, who is founder of Ski Migos, a ski holiday company, which we'll be discussing in more detail later on. Hi, Z, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Whereabouts are you today?
London.
Okay, and I think I didn't actually ask Dan, but I happen to know that Dan and Amira are in London as well, and I'm pretty sure, although I'm not 100% sure, that completing our studio today with a full house, I'm delighted to welcome Burhan Ali, founder of the Muslim Ski Club. Hi, Burhan, how are you?
Hey, thank you for having me on, and it's a pleasure to be with you today.
Okay, excellent. Well, what I do like to do with all of our guests at the start of the podcast is ask you when you skied or snowboarded last. So let's go round in order then. What about yourself, Amira? When were you last on snow?
Ooh. I've got to say, at the mid to end of April at the Free Valley Rally event in Valterrens.
Right, okay. And I'm guessing, Dan, that was when you were last on snow as well.
Yeah, it was. And we can be quite specific. It was actually 4:55 p.m. on April 26th because we were wrapping up that Bar 360, having celebrated raising around £80,000 at that time. And we had to get back for the magic carpet to get back to the Fitzroy ready for the awards dinner. But we're just so lucky at that event. You know, we had a snowstorm at the end of the winter season, you know, like 3 days before all of our guests arrived out in Valterrenne, being high ski resort in Europe anyway. So we were so lucky with that event. It was pure magic. But yeah, Amira and I were together with a few other apprentices, and just an amazing way to round off the winter season.
And that, just to clarify, that was the AJ Bell Three Valley Rally. It's your biggest fundraiser for Snowcamp every year.
Yeah, it's the big one, yeah.
Z, what about yourself? I did have a look on your Instagram earlier, so I've got a reasonable guess, but tell me, when were you last on snow?
So just under 12 weeks ago, mid-March, I was in Les Deux Alpes in France for a week out with the Ski Migos.
Cool. And, you know, as I say, I looked on the Instagram, it looked like a fantastic trip. What was the snow like while you were there?
The snow quality was really good. It was really good. The beginners had a fun time. The beginner slopes were largely kind of like well covered. And as you went higher up, there was some good quality. We did have a couple whiteouts, but I would say, you know, we had snow, which is the main thing. And we were happy.
Excellent. Well, we're definitely going to be asking you about that trip a little bit later on. Burhan, what about yourself? When were you last on snow?
On real snow, I'd say back end of February. We took our first club trip to Turkey. I think a mutual of ours, Mike, was also with us on that trip. That was a really good trip. So, yeah, that was about a week long. But then artificial snow, about 2 weeks ago.
Right. OK, well, we will talk about that trip to Turkey. And the Mike you're referring to is Mike Richards, who's a regular guest on the show. Listeners will know him. Just tell us now what the snow was like there.
It was good. We had a mix of whether we had some bluebird days, we had a whiteout and then fresh snow on, I think, at least 2 to 3 other days.
Cool. OK, well, that's great. There is some news which has just come in this morning. There was an embargo that was lifted about 40 minutes ago. And that is that Dave Riding has announced he's going to retire at the end of next winter. Now, that's not really much of a surprise, as he's 38 years old, one of the oldest skiers on the Alpine ski circuit already. But the key point is he wanted to stop speculation going on all season. There's a press conference later on this morning, almost immediately after we finish recording this podcast. So in an ideal world, I'll be able to drop some audio in here, but I'm not going to try and sum up his career. Simply say he's been the most successful British alpine skier of all time. He's an inspiration and we look forward to following what he does next.
Well, this is very much last minute, but I did speak to Dave yesterday and let's have a listen to what he had to say.
Nice one. Yeah, I think obviously everyone saw the announcement. Some were probably thinking it was a few seasons overdue. However, now everything felt right to draw a line after this season. At the grand old age of 39 at the Olympics, as long as I get there, I never count my chickens. But yeah, everything was feeling that that was the right time to do it. It allows me to fully commit to another season. And it allows me to kind of have a finish line for the commitment. I certainly won't be taking my foot off the gas because that's just not in my character. I've never done this sport for a jolly around the Alps. I've done it for results, and that will definitely be on the forefront of my mind for this year. My body's really, really fit and healthy, so I still believe, yeah, I can maybe even better everything I've done before. So that will be my goal, better my best ever Olympics as well. That's on the forefront of my mind. And yeah, business as usual until February. But obviously, yeah, it will be the last one. And I look forward to the finish line once it comes around.
So that we genuinely dropped in right at the last minute. If you'd like to know more about Dave and his career, I recommend you listen to episode 199 of the podcast. And all the best to Dave for his last season. Now, I've asked everyone else when they were last on snow. I was last on snow on the 30th of May, and regular listeners will know that I was doing a bit of fundraising for Snow Camp. It was a big day out. My plan was to ski to all 5 of the UK's indoor snow centres in a single day, skiing a minimum of 10 runs in each. I was also driving an electric car. I'm pleased to say the day couldn't have gone any better, considering I spent 12 hours driving for less than 2 hours of sleep time. I went to Tamworth Snow Dome, Chill Factory, Manchester, Snow Zone, Yorkshire and Castleford, Snow Zone, Milton Keynes and Hemel Hempstead. I've written up a blog post about how the day went, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But I'd just like to thank the many, many people who've donated since the last podcast, including all of those from the Snowheads community. The total is currently running at just over £1,600, and if you feel inclined to add to that total, there's a link to the Just Giving page in the show notes. Now, the point of that day was to raise funds for Snow Camp. And we have two people with us today who can give us a much better insight into what that charity does. Firstly, I wondered if I could start with you, Dan. Could you just give us an overview of what Snow Camp does with the money, let's say, you raise from the AJ Bell Three Valley Challenge and, you know, sponsorships like this?
Yeah, of course. But before I do that, I'm just going to thank you, Ian. So £1,600 raised with your challenge will fund 16 new young people onto our beginner programs this summer. So, you know, that doesn't happen without the likes of your support. So thank you. Yeah, Snow Camp. Well, we love what we do. And I've been involved for 13 years now. I'm the community and events director. The charity was founded back in 2003. So we're 22 years old. And it started with taking 13 young people out to the Alps and use the paraskiing and snowboarding to broaden horizons, break down barriers, and use it as a really powerful youth work tool to engage these young people that were just struggling in many different ways and use it to develop life skills, qualifications, and job opportunities. But we knew from that first trip that there was something really powerful here as a leveler. It was an environmental shift away from the challenges that they were facing in their daily lives in Camberwell at the time for those 13 young people. And here we are, 22 years on, working with over 1,000 young people any given year between London, the Midlands, the Northwest, and Scotland. But at the heart of it is turning young lives around with the power of snow sports.
So kind of clarify for listeners, it's almost like there's a three or maybe a four-step process in terms of what you can do, different stages that you can help people. Do you want to clarify what they are?
Definitely, and Mira can share her experiences shortly. But snow camp, the clock resets with snow camp every year. So from July 1st onwards, we start welcoming the new intake. 1,000-plus young people between those four regions will join us for a pretty intensive two-day beginner first tracks program at the indoor slopes. Hemel Hempstead, Snow Dome, Chill Factor, you know these places well, Ian, and the Scotland Outdoor Slopes as well. But it's a two-day beginner programme of which they spend 2 hours on the snow and 2 hours in the classroom on both days. But it's not just about skiing and snowboarding. We deliver youth work even in those two beginner programmes. You know, talking about goal setting, confidence, aspiration, sort of powerful youth work right off the cuff. And then, of course, we plant the seed about where the journey could take you. So you've got the two-day beginner programme in the summer. For those that put their hand up and want to return, then you've got the intermediate program, early winter season, and then it progresses on to the advanced program, peak winter season, which also culminates with a life-changing week in the mountains. But the numbers sort of whittle down over the years from that 1,000 to maybe, 100-ish young people that will go out to Andorra at the end of the year. So, there's that commitment. They've got to show up. They've got to sign the behaviour contracts and everything else. But that's life skills. You've got to turn up. You've got to commit to the journey. But beyond that, of course, we then employ young people as apprentices.
Yeah, I mean, I think the life skills are a really important side of it. But what you mentioned at the end there, you employ young people as apprentices. Maybe this would be a good point to come on to you, Amira, because you are currently on a year-long apprenticeship with Snowcamp. I wonder if I could just, though, take you back slightly and ask you how you first came into contact with Snowcamp.
So back in 2021, I was actually volunteering at my youth club, so helping a bunch of different children that have also been through lots of challenges in their lives and stuff. For those who were volunteering, there was a trip offered asking if they wanted to do a two-day course at Hemel Hempstead with a youth organisation called Snowcamp. Usually I'm not the type to put myself forward for any activities, extracurricular activities. That's just not me at all. But I was genuinely so intrigued on where I'm going to find snow in London that I had to go. So I went along and straight away I knew it was something I wanted to pursue straight away. Seeing what they do, just the way they're so committed as well is just amazing. So that's how it all began. And ever since, they haven't been able to get rid of me, really.
That's great. Dan, can I just ask you a question then? So obviously Amira is one of those 1,000 people who get that opportunity at the start. And you say, you whittle it down, but a certain number of those, let's say about 10%, get to go out to the Alps at the end of the year. But how do you select apprentices then? And how many positions are there? That must be quite a challenging role to get.
Yeah, well, for the programme team, it's one of the hardest parts of the year to filter the applications from young people that have completed the core Snowcamp journey. So you have to complete the core three-stage journey, which we've just described, to even warrant becoming an apprentice. And this year, we were employing 16 apprentices between our four regions. Amira was our single London apprentice. Yeah, we've got 16 joining the Snowcamp team. They're going to do us proud, but Amir can vouch for that or not.
Yeah,
they're going to do us proud, hopefully, this year.
Cool. Okay, so Amira, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about your current apprenticeship then. Am I right in saying that your first placement was with Ellis Brigham? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And after I've completed my apprenticeship placement, I then got offered a job there. So I'm still there till this day. And I was even there yesterday.
Right. Excellent. So what were you doing there then when you were working on that in your placement?
Well, I was all around the shop, doing all sorts, sales assistants, selling goggles, helmets, just helping customers, recommending what's best for their ski trips that they're going on. and just giving advice, really.
Excellent. I hope you were listening to the episodes of the Ski Podcast that Al Morgan and I did. They're obviously sponsored by Ellis Brigham.
Yeah.
But we have various staff members on giving some audio. Maybe we can have you on when we do it this winter. You've just finished at the Ski Club of Great Britain, haven't you? What was it like working there?
Well, I was doing like the more marketing side of things. So I'd say overall, it was so interesting to see like what else goes into snow sports off snow. So seeing it from more office-based things, doing the 9 to 5, working on the Ski Club website, listening to, you know, all the intel that they're getting from all these other people to make these trips happen.
I mean, we had on the last episode, we had James Gambrell, who is the COO of the Ski Club of Great Britain. And we talk about, you know, bringing different people. They've got a campaign going on with Snow Sport England at the moment to bring new people into the sport. You talk about the trips. Were you involved on the Fresh Tracks programme? Is it to do with that you were working on?
Not so much the programmes, but more just watching from the sidelines, seeing how it all runs and works.
Oh, and you mentioned that you've finished that now. So are you back to Ellis Brigham? Basically, that's your job now, is it?
Yeah, just finish it up. All my placement hours soon, hopefully maybe moving on to a new placement. We'll just see how it goes, really. But I'm staying at Ellis Brigham for now. Yeah.
And we were talking about life skills earlier. I believe, I'm not 100% sure about this, but when you're out at the AJ Bell Three Valley Rally, you did a presentation to explain your journey. Is that right?
Oh my goodness. The scary speech you're on about. Yeah, we did. We did. Building up a lot to that moment, but glad I did it in the end.
So how big was that audience that you were talking to?
Yeah, well, we had 18 teams at this year's event, 18 teams of four, plus a whole bunch of non-competing guests who were with us at the hotel this year. We had all the staff in the room. Then we had Shemi, we had Jemmy, we had, you know, the Bell family. So it's pretty intense, you know, and it's really the best part of the event. You know, you hoon around the mountains for 2 days, but then you all come together for the awards dinner. The last thing we do before we announce the winners, highest fundraisers and the winners of the actual challenge, the real highlight is hearing from these guys. And even, you know, I was crying at the back and, you know, I was one of many in the room. It's pretty powerful. And, you know, we take it for granted as a staff team, let alone everybody, you know, joining us and perhaps hearing about Snow Camp for the first time. And Amira is the best ambassador, really, for why we do what we do.
What was it that you said that got Dan crying then?
Well, mainly just all that Snow Camp have done for me, how the journey all started, where I am today and what they've, you know, provided, all the opportunities I've received, how they've turned my life around, as much as, you know, I can't thank them enough, really.
And, you know, I understand you've got the bug and maybe you'd like to work a few ski seasons now. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Hopefully that is the next step. Hopefully this season, this year, possibly.
Well, I can tell you, I did 6 winter seasons, so I can tell you it's very addictive. Once you get out there, it's hard to stop. You never know, you might, end up getting the bug completely. But that is brilliant. So that's really good to understand a little bit more about Snow Camp. And listeners, you know, will know that I've been talking about it quite a lot recently, and we can kind of see what they do.
Oh,
okay, well, that's excellent. Thank you very much for sharing all of that. Now, today's episode, we're looking at increasing diversity within the ski industry. And one of the reasons I wanted to ask Z to join us is that her company, Skimigos, is doing just that. You mentioned it, you were out in Ladies Out in March. How did that trip go?
It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. We had over 100 people attend. We took over a hotel. We had it to ourselves. The snow was fantastic. We flew out DJs, you know, to just have that kind of like fresh new vibe. We partnered with a famous festival called Matt's Barbecue. They held an event. We, you know, skiing is, despite the vibes, is our focus. And we had like a sort of competitions like throughout. People did a slalom at the end. We had like a live commentator like on the mic, and we had a brilliant award ceremony, just really kind of spotlighting people's efforts and their progression throughout the week. This was the first year we also had like a yoga instructor, so you know, people had the option of, you know, stretching their sore muscles.
And I'm interested, you said you had over 100 people. I mean, fantastic that you got the whole venue to yourself, because that definitely makes a difference, I think. But out of 100 people, so how many of those were beginners? Was it their first time in the mountains?
So this year, I'd say we had about 60% beginner cohort. Previously, it's actually been higher, but we've kind of got returnees and they're progressing. That's so great. Now we have a growing cohort of intermediates as well as advanced people attending.
Oh, and let's take you back a little bit, Erzi. What prompted you to set up the company? Because I think when I was doing my research, it looks like you did your first trip in 2019.
Yep. So I was really fortunate growing up. My dad was part of the first black ski club in the UK called Ski Fest. And he went on their first trip in 1996. And, you know, he went out on slopes, saw all these kids whizzing down, you know, as young as 3 years old. And was like, what the hell? But at the same time, like, super impressed. You know, he thought he'd love us to have that experience and opportunity. And despite, you know, the advice from everybody around him, including people in the ski club, he decided to bring us the following year, so 1997. I was 7 years old and my brother was 4 years old. And, you know, we got the opportunity to go annually. We were really, really lucky. And I always wanted to share that with my friends, hence Ski Me Goes, Me and Ski Friends. When I was at uni, I actually found it really difficult to persuade my friends to go. You're living on a shoestring. And, you know, there's this thing called skiing that no one in their community has done except for Zahir, who's the weird person. And, you know, I'm trying to get them to spend their, like, their lunch money on going skiing. It was really hard. But then with the development of social media, which is now providing a window into that world so people can actually see, like, you know, what's happening, it was easier to say, come on, let's go. Like, you know, you've seen, you know, a couple of videos. And also, you know, my network was getting older and they had a little bit more spending power. And in 2019, you know, I managed to kind of round the troops and we got about 30 people together.
Where did you go on that first trip?
So we visited Meerhofen in Austria.
And then obviously COVID got in the way. But I just want to track back slightly. I mean, you mentioned about, you know, some of the objections that people come up with and how social media has helped. Mm-hmm. And again, I noticed on your social media, you tackle a lot of those things, you know, directly. Oh, you know, skiing's dangerous or it's too cold. And you're actually, you know, literally dealing with those things and trying to educate people like, hey, you know, it's not all like that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like over the years, you know, as you said, it's too cold, it's too dangerous. I'm the first son in my family. If anything happened to me, what would I do? It's not for people like us. So, you know, through social media, we're able to show people, one, these stereotypes and these myths are not true, and two, how they would go from, you know, an absolute novice to having confidence in, you know, going down a ski slope and being a skier and being able to do it with their friends or being able to take their families.
Yeah, I think it's a phrase you mentioned there, not for people like us. I mean, I think that's one of the whole issues of maybe what we're trying to tackle here, because maybe I should ask you, you know, why do you think representation is important?
If you don't see it, then you don't believe it, you don't think you can do it. It's an interesting one. So by, say, advertising only to one demographic, you are unconsciously signaling to others in that belong to different class groups or different demographics that it's not for them, or that, you know, they wouldn't fit, or they, you know, there's going to be some kind of friction. It's not a space for them. So, and that's the importance of representation. If you see someone like me, you think, oh, you know, it's like an unlock in your mind. Oh, I could do that. And, you know, part of the reason why we choose resorts that are kind of cater to beginners, intermediates and advanced is so that people in black, brown, even working class communities, so they're not black or brown, but they're working class communities, they attend and they create like this kind of standard for people who are beginners. Like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that someone like me could like be this good. And they also, you know, provide a lending hand as well. They're super supportive. They take the beginners out in the afternoons and we see that kind of acceleration and that kind of that investment in wanting to pick this up as a hobby and keep doing it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the work that Snowcamp does in terms of, you know, addressing the concept that, oh, you know, this isn't for people like us. If people know someone who's been skiing, they know someone who's been to a snow slope, think, oh, well, you know, I know, you know, my friend did, or my friend of a friend, they were talking about it, you know, and I did this as well. I also noticed that the après does look off the chart. DJs out there. It looks amazing.
Yeah, no, thank you. I think, like, so I want to say that in the ski resorts that we, in many ski resorts, not just the ones that we visit, the après is fantastic. What there is to do already in resorts is amazing. But one thing I noticed personally all over the many years that I went skiing was that the same music gets recycled. You know, it's like it's very kind of low effort in a lot of places. And it's like, why, you know? So, you know, it started with me having an idea of just kind of asking one of the people in the group who's a DJ, hey, like, if I can get you a spot at a club, could you play? It would be lovely to just have a bit of sort of freshness, you know. London is like a cultural powerhouse. We're exposed to all of this culture, foods, genres of music. Like, why can that not exist in the Alps, you know? And so, you know, that's some of the magic that we create when we go out there.
To me, that looks evident. And I kind of know what you're saying. I mean, there's certain mountain bars where people go for an après ski where they do seem to churn out a lot of DJ Otzi and Living on a Prayer and stuff like that. Folly Deuce is a bit different. You know, that is pretty vibrant. They do an amazing show there. But I like that idea of bringing something different in. What about next year then? You went to Lederzamp, you've been to Meierhofen as well. Do you have a trip planned already for 2026 or multiple trips?
Yes, so at the moment in the diary, we've got Les Dual. So at the moment, we've got one kind of flagship experience. And at the moment, we're kind of channeling them through this one experience, and it would be nice to kind of expand and serve them more. So there's an element of it that's about creating connections, and those connections are hugely powerful and serve as lifelong bonds. And we've seen that just occur naturally in smaller groups, which kind of foster this intimacy. And so we're thinking about ways that we can retain that.
Cool. Well, yeah, I look forward to following the continued growth, because I think, you know, again, I can't remember where I read this, but you kind of doubled in size on the first trip and then, you know, increased it again 25% for the next one. So if that growth continues, I imagine you'll be running your own festival in the Alps somewhere in a couple of years' time. That's great, Z. Thanks very much for that. If it's okay, I'm going to turn to Burhan now. We've already heard about several initiatives that are tackling diversity on the slopes. And they say, you know, you should avoid all conversations about politics and religion, but it is there in the name. It is the Muslim Ski Club. I wondered if I could start by asking you what prompted you to found the Muslim Ski Club.
I went on my first ski trip two seasons ago now. I went with a nice large group and we had such a great experience out there. We were in Porto Slay, so Morzine specifically. As we all know, that first time you stand at the top of a peak of a mountain, right, it's a different experience when you're looking at all the snow-capped mountains. And it's a feeling that, you know, you can only describe to people who have actually been there. And when I came back, I sort of discussing with everyone, say, do you feel like you want to go skiing? You just have, like Zahir was saying, the prompting people, right, to try and encourage them to go out. But actually, while I was over there, I had this sort of premonition or vision, you can say. There are, like you've mentioned already, underrepresentation on the slopes is not hard to spot. I don't see that as a problem, but I also see that as an opportunity, right? So for someone like myself, who's had several businesses in the past, I came back, started doing market research, you know, started prompting people, prodding people to see if they were up for going skiing. And then the idea just snowballed from there. The objective obviously was threefold. So when I was discussing and talking to people, I came across three key issues that I wouldn't even say Muslims, I would say general people face when you talk to them about skiing. One is they don't feel they have people to go with. We spoke about already, you know, having a community to go with, having your friends to go with. That was a major blocker. The second one was they didn't really know what was the first step to take. Although I live about 20 minutes from the snow center, most of the people that I spoke to in Bedfordshire and Luton, they've never heard of the snow center, and that's 20 minutes away. And then the third one is the sort of catered experiences, right? Like as a Muslim, I have specific prayer times I want to stop. I have halal dietary requirements that may need adhering to. Those type of things hinder people from taking certain trips, because what you're doing is essentially trying to tell people to go on a ski trip, and it's a trade-off against them going to somewhere like Dubai or somewhere else.
I kind of understand that it could definitely be a challenge to resolve issues on the slopes, because you talk about, you know, meals which need to, you need to have halal food. You're looking for an environment that is more alcohol free as well, which, you know, we're talking about that doesn't always mix with the, what you might call traditional European après ski. Is that why you picked Turkey on the trip for this year?
That's why, yeah, Turkey was I guess the low hanging fruit to try and go there. One, I mean, they have partying in Turkey as well. Everyone knows this. It was more for the halal food, right? The catering side was probably a big requirement. And while we were on this trip, I'm going to talk about this later, but while we were on this trip, we coined a new term, après-ski over après-ski. So what we were doing, instead of going to après-ski, we were coming back to the hotel, and because we had so many people in the hotel, we'd have sort of a set of like cakes and biscuits and tea and so on. So the hotel lobby would essentially be full of Muslim Ski Club members, and we'd just taken off over the whole lounge. And that was good, because then we had others who weren't with the club, those who were traveling from Turkey and other countries, join in and have discussions with us, and yeah, create a great atmosphere. So I realized, you know, maybe there is a little bit of demand for this, because I've spoken to a lot of people who aren't Muslim, and they've also said is, we don't drink. You just want to go and ski, right? Like yourself.
Yeah, when you say that pray tea, not that pray ski, you know, my hand went up. That's more my sort of thing. I'm too old to be going out drinking after skiing.
Right. And it's about catering to the people, different experiences, right? And I think I remember saying this to someone recently, the Muslim Ski Club is not exclusionary. It was better to name it Muslim Ski Club than the non-alcoholic ski club, right? We're not trying to single people out. We're not trying to exclude anyone, but we have a certain set of requirements that our members want fulfilling, and we're there to help do that. And that was obviously the founding vision behind the club. So to boil that down, it essentially comes down to three key things that we focus on: is connect, learn, and experience. So how do we get everyone to connect, build a community? How do we support people to begin their ski journey and, you know, develop along the way? And then experiences, how do we cater to those specific needs and craft great experiences for everyone?
As well as the Turkey trip, I mean, it's not the only trip. You organised several during the course of the winter. So I think that last winter, one of the first was you went to Voriaz, and that was Eid in the Alps. Is that right?
So that's this year. That's coming up. So last year, I was there again with a large group, and we had another friend of ours, and we did something separately for the club as a test, just to see whether it would be a destination we want to go back to. We were in Morzine for our sort of event, but I sort of hopped over to all the other resorts to decide where best we could take a group to celebrate Eid. And obviously Avoria has just got the Alpine charm, doesn't it, with the car-free village. So we picked that as a destination for just after Eid next year.
Oh, and, you know, evidently you see that there's an increase in interest, because you mentioned that you have the Avoria's trip booked in. And then also I saw on your website there's a trip to Baquira Baray in Spain planned as well.
Yeah, there's. I think next year is going to be quite busy. We've got three trips: Baquira Baray, Avoriaz, and we are probably going to go back to Turkey. I'm just finalizing the details on that.
I think earlier you said that you live near the snow center and not many people have heard of that, even though it's very close to you. But within the Muslim Ski Club, you've organized indoor taster sessions for members of the Muslim Ski Club. But there's also some crossover with Snow Camp in relation to lessons for young Muslims. Is that right?
Yeah, thanks, Baham. Yeah, there's various, you know, threads. And that's what we love about this whole industry, right? And there's so many great crossovers. Yeah, so this isn't directly linked with the Muslim Ski Club, but it is definitely complementary. So this summer, again, when the Snow Camp clock resets with our beginner programs in London and the Midlands in particular, we do have 120 young people from the inner city communities joining our programs from the Muslim Scout Fellowship at the Snow Centre and the Snow Dome in the Midlands. So, Burham, we're going to have to get you along for sure. Yeah. And, you know, obviously the hope is that, you know, a big chunk of those young people will progress onto the intermediate stage. The intermediate stage, as Mira will tell you, is amazing, because that's when we start to get guest speakers coming in, we really start to get to know the young people. We really start to go much deeper with not just their skiing and snowboarding, but the life skills and everything else. So, you know, to really start opening their eyes to various communities, just like Ski Migos and Muslim Ski Club and, you know, other opportunities that exist out there is super special. So, yeah, Berhan, we need to keep in touch, looking ahead to October.
I was just going to say, I look forward to it, and then congratulations. I think Snowcap does amazing work as it is already, and then they're continuously expanding the work that they do. So yeah, hats off to you guys.
I love the way this crossover between all of our conversations here between the Muslim Ski Club, the work that Z's doing with Ski Migos and Snowcamp across the board. And you know, I found it a really interesting conversation, and hopefully you, listener, have found it a really interesting conversation as well. We're just going to move towards the close now. Feedback. I always enjoy listener feedback. We've had a couple since our last episode. Ben on Facebook said, I love the podcast. He also asked a question about Zillertal in Austria. And it turns out we have never covered that. So Ben, I promise you that we'll include that next winter. And Pete on Facebook said he loved episode 248 and our discussion about the possible revival of Sheffield Ski Village. I love that grassroots vibe. You can contact me with your feedback via our social channels at the Ski Podcast or by email theskipodcast@gmail.com. And there are now 261 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with. I had a look and a ridiculous 215 of those were listened to in the last week. Normally what that means is that someone is missing winter a lot and is just transporting them back to the snow through their ears and going through our entire almost back catalogue. There's a lot to catch up with there. If you just go to theskipodcast.com, have a search around the tags and categories, you're bound to find something of interest to you. In the last week, around half of our listeners were in the UK, 30% in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as Morocco, Argentina, and Japan. Now you can follow me at Skipedia and the podcast at the Ski Podcast. You can also follow us on WhatsApp for exclusive material released ahead of the podcast. Look in the show notes for that link. I would like to thank all of my guests today. Amira, thank you very much.
Thanks for that, Ian. Lovely being on here.
Dan, thank you.
Thanks, Ian. Pleasure as always. Thanks.
Z, thank you.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem. And Berhan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you all, and look forward to seeing you all on the slopes soon.
Finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.